Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Now, I'm delighted to be able to welcome Sharon Corr to studio, singer and violin player with the band of siblings from Dundalk, who gave us songs like Breathless, So Young, What Can I Do, Runaway, and this one. Sharon Corr, good morning to you and welcome to studio.
Fabulous to see you, Miriam, and it's great to be home.
Now listen, you live in Madrid. Yeah. What's it like there? I assume sunnier and drier than here anyway.
Well, it's a lot drier. A lot more sun. I love Madrid. It's a very beautiful cultural city, plenty of great museums. And, you know, if you just walk, it's like a walking art gallery. Yeah. And you can be out in the terraces having a beer or whatever and some nice tapas all year round. So I fell in love with it in the late 90s. Basically made my decision while I was out promoing with the Corrs in Spain. I went, I'm going to have to live here at some stage. So I moved 6 years ago.
Your two children, of course, they're teenagers now, aren't they? Yeah. How old are your son and your daughter? How old are they?
Well, Cal just turned 18 last week. Flory,
he's an adult.
He's an adult. And it's like, you know, I know he was waiting to pounce. You know, it was this sort of thing where it was like all of a sudden he said he was just waiting for the moment where he could say, you actually can't tell me what to do anymore, can you? And I'm like, no, I can't. So you're making your own decisions, but you're going to be responsible for them as well. Just remember I'm paying the bills for the moment, you know. So, and my daughter Flory turns 17 in July.
Oh, they're beautiful ages.
They're lovely. Challenging. You've got enough children as well, don't you? So
lovely, challenging.
Like something else, isn't it?
Do you mind going right back for my listeners this morning, Sharon? Remind us where you grew up and about your mum and dad. They were super musical themselves, weren't they?
Yeah, we grew up in Dundalk. Mum and dad are both from Dundalk. Their family heritage would be Tyrone and Donegal. Dad worked as an accountant in the ESB in Dundalk, and mum was a stay-at-home mum until she said, that's enough of that, and I'm going out to work because I'm making my own money. And she, one thing that she always said to us girls was, make your own money, and I've always stood by it and I firmly believe in it. So yeah, so we went there. Apart from, you know, the day jobs, their greatest love in life was music, and it was actually something that they had in common. So they had a band together. So they made the extra money just to get the new bathroom or to get a, you know, washing machine and all that sort of stuff when we were growing up, by making music at the weekends. And they found the magic in their life. Mm-hmm. Doing that together, being creative, you know, which is where the magic is in my life. So we were brought up surrounded by music, and, you know, that was the whole naissance of everything, you know.
And of course, there's you and Caroline and Andrea and Jim.
Yeah.
But do you mind me asking, there was another little boy, Jared, wasn't
That's
there?
That's right. Yeah. You're going to get me crying, but because actually it was Dad's anniversary just the other day. But yes, we had a brother, Jared, and his anniversary wasn't that long ago. Actually, it was in April. So he died when he was four years old. And I was basically just brought home from hospital, for my mother had just had me as a newborn baby, and unfortunately he was killed on the road in front of our house by a car going by. So yeah, tragic beginnings.
And did your parents talk about Jared much, or was one of those things that
would come out sort of unexpectedly? They had to be very strong for us, and indeed very strong for each other, because can you imagine keeping a marriage together with that? I mean, they do say that most people lose their marriages through the death of a child. And my parents didn't. Every so often I'd find mum, you know, with a jumper that she'd knitted for Jared, and she'd be touching it, and you know, and I'd find her in a sort of stolen moment, you know, mm-hmm. and dad too, you know, every so often. I guess it's like one of the great, I suppose you would have to call it a great fundamental and terrible fundamental, but possibly of the course, you know, because mm-hmm. that was our brother, and apparently he was extremely talented. You know, loved music. So we thought he would have been the bass player because we were missing a bass player.
Oh, he probably would have been.
Yeah.
So were you always going to be in a band? Like, how did that begin?
Well, we weren't always going. I mean, I guess we were. You know, if you believe in destiny and fate, I guess we were. But we didn't know that. But we were brought up in so much music. We were following our separate courses. I was in the Junior Irish Youth Orchestra and you know, so playing classical music, undisciplined as I was. And Caroline and Andrea were learning piano. Caroline's 3 years younger than me and Andrea 4. And Jim's 6 years older, so we have that gap then mm-hmm. because of Jared. And Jim was out pursuing a musical career, so he was playing with the Fountainhead and Dolores Keane and different mm-hmm. people like that. And Jim was recording people. He was a real tech individual, you know, so he was recording different people. And he was recording this guy called John Hughes, who is an artist, who then became our manager.
Great guy.
Fantastic guy. Mm. It just grew from that. It was the casting director, Ross Hubbard, had said when we were auditioning for The Commitments, you guys should be a band and he should be your manager. And that was it. Then I think the beautiful thing was that our parents were very unique in their outlook, as that they weren't so terrified of the sharks in the industry that they didn't want us to reach for the stars.
And your dad apparently always believed you would get to the stars.
And my dad said, you're going to rule the world.
But for Amazing. Instance, that song, Runaway.
Yeah.
I remember 95 dancing around with my little girls in rooms. Everyone loved that song. The genesis of that, how did that come about? Is it right that you just heard Andrea one day tinkling something on the piano?
Close.
Okay.
Okay, so I think I was down in the kitchen and Andrea was upstairs, and we had my grandmother's piano, which was violently out of tune. But that's what we grew up on. And it was in Jim's bedroom. And Caroline was up playing around with something on the piano, and I heard this and it sounded really, really, really beautiful. And I kind of started humming to it, and I went upstairs, and then I sort of wrote a set of terrible lyrics to it. And then Andrea came upstairs, and then she started working on it. And it sort of, it came about just very naturally. And the curious thing about it, and this seems to happen to an awful lot of bands, it's the last song on a record is the first song out. It's really, really curious. And you don't even think you're going to put the song on the record. We had never pitched this song to David Foster, who became our producer, because it wasn't finished. One day, I don't know, maybe Jim was in the studio or something, I don't know what it was, and David Foster walked into the house that we were living in, and he goes, "What's that?" You know, and we went, "Oh, well, this is just, you know, like something." And then Jim started playing along to it. And then he did that change at the end where it goes from minor to major.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's sort of like, it's a lovely lilt on it.
And David Foster said, "I love it."
He said, "Well, that's going on the album."
Was that song the beginning of your huge success?
I guess because it was the first song out, yes. But the one that got us the first sort of push over the hill, sort of, if you know what I mean, when you're sort of climbing and you're climbing and you know nobody's noticing and you've got this album out. And so we were asked by a guy in Atlantic Records to contribute a song to a tribute record of Fleetwood Mac, and Dreams was available, and we did it. And we recorded it with Oliver Lieber, who's the son of a very famous artist, and a guy called John Shanks, which the band have worked with since, another producer. And they had a different twist on it. And then I wrote the violin line in the studio, and they were like you know, when the Americans hear the Irish thing, they're like, oh my God, what's that? I love it, you know, because it just became rootsy all of a sudden. And then that was the first thing that sort of just started to get play properly on radio. However, before then, we'd kind of hit it big in Australia with Forgiven Not Forgotten.
I loved as well, isn't it true? Because you'd been pretty broke living in a house together, pretty and much. You were saying it was full of spiders or something. I read that. And then when you finally did make it, you and Andrea, I think you went shopping in Harvey Nicks.
Oh, yeah.
In London.
Yeah, it's like, well, our house, our actual family home was perfect, and Mum and Dad kept it great. Jim had his a rented, what was it, lodge at the end of, you know, like a farm or whatever. And it was just riddled in damp and spiders. And, you know, we had the egg cartons on the wall for soundproofing. I mean, it was as basic as you get. Manky. But, you know, then cut to maybe 1998, 1999. It's Christmas time. We're never out of London. We're never out. We're just touring the world. We're playing like Wembley Arena six times in a row. And it's like, you know, it's like mind boggling. We were staying in the Mandarin Oriental in Knightsbridge, which is, again, it's like, hello, we're from Dundalk. And then I remember, you know, coming out of the Mandarin Oriental in London, and we never stopped working. So we had a day off, and we were going in to buy Mum and Dad their Christmas presents. And I don't think I'd been in Harvey Nicks before. I mean, we did, and everybody recognised us. And we were like, oh my God, this is mortifying. And then I remember buying Mom this like beautiful Donna Karan velvet sort of did top and skirt for Christmas, because this was the Christmas where we've treated them, you know. And just to be able to afford that stuff was greatly appreciated, unnecessary, but lovely to do for our parents. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that sort
really
of thing
beautiful.
Was
like
lovely.
Giving back to them.
It is, yeah.
And when you think back on those amazing days, you say like 6 days in a row at Wembley, and you are back together again now. Yeah. You're going to be touring again this year, which is wonderful. Yeah. Do you enjoy it more now than in the huge days or not? Is it different?
I think that I know personally I'm much more comfortable in my skin. I have a lot more confidence as an older woman. And I'm very proud of being an older woman, you know, in my 50s. 50s have been the best years of my life, I have to say. I think that there were so many times that I really enjoyed in the earlier days, but we didn't. Like, I remember saying to Andrea specifically the first day in Wembley Arena, I remember saying, I went up to her on stage and we were doing soundcheck. We were terrified. We were like deer in the headlights, you know. And I said to her, pinch yourself so you can remember this. Now we do things our own way. It's like, yeah, we're not doing any promo. And, you know, if we are doing promo, they're coming to the hotel. You know what I mean? And we have a good makeup artist. We have styling. So it's like you can get your sleep because you need it. We just toured New Zealand, Australia, Manila. We were in Manila and also Jakarta in November. We were out for a month and we had an absolute ball.
Because people still love all the songs.
They really do. And they're really glad that we've come back. And you know, I feel really, really privileged to do what I do.
And into every life. As you say, you're enjoying your 50s more than any other decade.
Yeah.
But including myself, like many people, you've had a broken marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that? And are you much better now? Have you moved on from
that? Well, it's never fun. I mean, come on, you know that, Miriam. And I mean, I don't know anything about your history, but you've told me just that.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of my stuff was reported quite heavily in the newspapers via the other people involved, because I never had my private life in the newspapers. So it became news sort of, you know, via the fact of who my ex had gotten involved with. But it wasn't the story of always is completely incorrect and it's nobody's business. And I don't care to, you know, talk about it because it's like, do you know what I mean? It's just, you know. But I am How would I say? I have learned so much from the storm of that, that I'm extremely grateful. Like, it really, really pushed lessons in front of me that if I didn't learn, that I would either just stay on this sort of like a safe fence, or I'd, you know, get off and do something about it. And I got off and I did something about it. And I've, you know, taken my music career to different dimensions. As a woman, I love being single. I would say I'm probably one of the happiest divorced women on the planet. So I'm coming on, must be 6 years now. No, 5 years. And I'm delighted I did it.
So do I take from this, you're not planning to marry again? Never say never. So
there's the thing, because, you know, I would talk to my best friend, Des, who's Des McMahon. He's from Dublin. I'm going to see him tonight for a few drinks. And he would say to me, Sharon, never say never. Do not close the door. And I get that. But, you know, you're so severely sort of like, oh, my God, that was 23 years and it ended up a bad idea, except for my beautiful children and the beautiful early years. I have to be grateful for that. But it's such a hard journey that you kind of go, why would I ever do that to myself again? I think if I wanted to be with somebody for the idea of forever, which is what, I don't know, I probably do not get married, but I would, you know, do something with friends and going more sort of committing to each other. But at that still, like, I'm getting the heebie-jeebies and my stomach's starting to turn at the idea.
I'm with Des, though. Never say never.
I agree. I have to agree with that, because I have changed my opinions on so many things, and I think it's really important to be open to things, because they're the things that you should do. The things are the things that you fear, the things that you should try, you know?
You're saying you're in your 50s. You look exactly the same to me as you did on stage. Well, you actually do. And part of the reason you're here today is because you are an ambassador.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about what you're an ambassador for, because it's all about face cream. You don't look like you need face cream, by the way.
Well, I definitely do. I definitely do, and I definitely use it. I was asked by Number 7 and Boots last year to get involved in, to be an ambassador for their Future Renew creams. So they sent me the products, and I have to say I loved them, because I've been sort of, obviously, I've come across most products on the planet and some of the really heavy upper end ones and stuff like that. And I haven't, that's not really great. And it costs you like 300 quid and you're like kind of going, that's rubbish. You know, I'd rather put some coconut oil on my face. But I actually genuinely love the product, and it feels very, very natural to put on. I don't have any reactions. And you would know as well as I do, Miriam, that as we get older, our skin's reacting very, very, very differently across the board.
Well, you're an ad for whatever you're using. Finally, what's your own favourite Cora song? Like, if you have
It's Runaway.
It's Runaway. Me too.
Always does it. I actually end up in tears. I was in tears in Australia just watching the crowd singing it with us.
Well, look, Sharon, thank you so much for coming into studio this morning. The dates also for your two big Irish gigs for the Cores are the 8th of November in Belfast, SSE Arena, and the 9th of November in the Thria Arena in Dublin. So let's play out on your favourite track and mine, Runaway.
Lovely to see you, Miriam.
Lovely to see you, Sharon.
Say it's true, there's nothing like me and you. I'm not alone, tell me you feel it too. And I